57 yards, a night of big plays for South Carolina.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Hey, let's extend the runway. We're gonna remodel the airport.
Russ Dellinger.
I can imagine Diego like popping out of your closet, you know, while you're trying to sleep.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Water championships, takedown cyclones. There's the headline.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Day after the big showdown in Happy Valley, Ohio State 20, Penn State 13. The October Massacre, Part 8. It's like a Halloween show.
Yeah,
Pat, you've seen many of these. Ross, you've seen many of these. I'll let you guys were both there, but simple recap. Excellent win for Ohio State. Disastrous loss for Penn State. We're products of negativity here. Hate sells. Let's start.
Our Sunday shows are usually filled with hate. So
let's start with the scene in State College. Saw James Franklin getting in with fans. I mean, what was the mood? What was the mood, Pat?
I think it was a combination of resignation and increasing bitterness at the resignation. You know, there's a lot of Penn State fans now who kind of just think they can't beat Ohio State, even though they can sit down, you know, the day before the game or a couple hours before the game and come up with all these reasons why they should be able to. But then in the back of their mind, they're like, yeah, we're probably not going to, and it's going to tick us off. And this time they were certainly given a great injection of hope right away. They're up 10-0. They get a pick six. Terrible throw by Will Howard. Great play by the defensive back. And Ross, I don't know whether you felt it where you were sitting, but the press box was shaking. Like, the entire stadium was shaking at that point. There was 111,000 people there. It was the biggest crowd in Beaver Stadium history. One of the biggest in college football history outside of the Big House. And it was so massively loud and energetic at that point. And then it just dissipated. And give credit to Ohio State for handling that, weathering the storm, and a few other things, but we'll get to them. But Penn State, opportunities, couldn't capitalize, you know, maybe a questionable call here or two, and then they want to turn that into a federal case. Sorry, make some plays. It was just, the feeling really to me was just like, here we are again. And I am so sick of being here, like if you're a Penn State fan. And then, yeah, Franklin, I thought very poor showing after the game by getting into it with a fan. If you're him and you're getting $10 million a year and you've just lost to Penn State for the 8th straight time, you put your head down and run off that field. It's tough if you're Penn State. It really is. Because, again, they're probably going to go to the playoff. You look at the rest of their schedule, right? They should be able to win the rest of their games. They should be able to go to the playoff. They might host a game. And if you get in, you don't know what might happen. But it's just got to be so galling to continue to butt your head into the concrete wall that is Ohio State.
The James Franklin walking off the field through the tunnel. There were a couple of videos run from Adam Rittenberg at ESPN, the other from Audrey Snyder at The Athletic. And if you watch them both, you can kind of hear James Franklin jawing with the two fans who are hanging over the railing at him. And you kind of hear him say something like, well, what's your name? You know, if you're going to talk, what's your name? And the fans obviously don't give their name. They turn their back, one of them at least, and walked away. But then he goes down the tunnel, and you can hear the boos, and then the couple of fire Franklins. So it's pretty clear. Oh, and by the way, as I was walking, and I was kind of in front of him going toward the visitor, the Ohio State locker room, there was, the fans are just flooding out, right? And the things you overhear as fans are flooding out is truly worth, you know, a book through the years as you hear the losing fans file out. But this one included things like, figure it out, Franklin. It's just a lot of F words. And it clearly, Penn State fans they just had that look on the face as they were walking out of another one, like another one where we were, we felt this close, but we don't have that extra gear, specifically offensively, to do it. And it was indicative of how the game ended, was so indicative that they're down on the goal line and they get four cracks inside the 3 yard line and run the ball three straight times up the middle. And it just, it's just over and over the same movie over and over. Not enough explosive players on offense. And in the end, kind of grounded, you know, on the lines, kind of Ohio State kind of grounded the game out there in the end. So it's going to be interesting going forward. And Pat brings up a great point. I mean, if they go to 11-1, they're in line for the 6, 7, 8 seed probably to host a playoff game. But when you see them play against Ohio State at home and they do what they did, it's hard to see that team without, again, the explosiveness on the outside winning the national title or even winning more than one playoff game.
Yeah, or a playoff game. I think someone will be happy to do it. We're going to go through what we project will be the rankings on Tuesday night. And spoiler, I'm using Nick Bromberg. Great Nick Bromberg works for Yahoo. He did his. Kind of using that as the guy. He's got Penn State at 8 because they could beat Washington, Purdue, Minnesota, and Maryland to finish the season and end up 11-1. So they would, you know, they would host a game, but then could they, you know, it's tough. To me, this was a terrible loss for Penn State, and not just because they lost again to Ohio State. You're at home, right? You have Ohio State team that's shown some signs of weakness. You have built this thing up. You get a pick six and you get a fumble out of the end zone. That's 14 points. You got a 14-point swing there. Now, maybe Ohio State punts it down instead of the pick six and you stop them and you get points. But that is, you get 14 points on a team like Ohio State that you can't beat. You have to win the game. You have to win that football game because Ohio State is hard to beat. They don't lose. And so they lost to Michigan 3 times, and it's like meltdown. They lose in the last second at Oregon. I mean, they just don't lose. They lose to Georgia. They lose to those teams, but they don't lose. And if you're waiting for, well, once this kid graduates, we'll move up. They never go anywhere. Waiting for decades for them to not be good. And other than a transitional year here or there, and this was your shot, and Michigan's down this year, but they are focused wholly on rebuilding for next year with a Brinks truck worth of money. And so this was your shot. You got him at home. You got a 14-point swing. You got a pick six off this kid, Will Howard, who, to all credit in the world on him, he threw that pick six, and I was a little nervous for him because he's like, I'm a Pennsylvania kid, and I'm coming back home, and I'm going to prove it. Ooh, boy. More often than not, that kid walks off in tears with 4 picks. He's thrown 4 interceptions or some terrible game because he tried too hard, and that's how normally that emotion plays. And he throws a pick six early, and like you said, I mean, I could feel that crowd, however many miles away I am in Detroit. It was incredible. But then all of a sudden, Ohio State settles. They start running good plays. Chip Kelly, fantastic play calling. Unbelievable. It's going here, boom, here, oh, boom. Everybody's open. They get a penalty. They start getting frustrated. They're taunt. You know, should have been a taunting penalty. I hate unsportsmanlike penalties.
That was silly. Yeah, that was hate 'em. That. Yeah, wasn't that egregious? Like, what are we doing?
It wasn't. I don't think it should be a penalty. I hate all. Unless you smack the kid, I don't care. Like, I don't like the penalty at all. I hate this concept that we have to legislate sportsmanship. I don't like it. However, you have to be disciplined. You're playing Ohio State. One mistake and you lose. You're not playing Purdue. You're not playing Iowa. And then you get down. And then in the end, they got a chance to tie it. Did they think they were just going to bulldoze the Ohio State defensive line? I didn't understand these plays. Like,
clearly. I mean, that possession was so bad. And to be clear, they changed offensive coordinators because last year they were inexplosive. They couldn't come up with creative plays. They scored one offensive touchdown last year in Columbus against Ohio State. At the end, cosmetic TD didn't matter at all. And then they scored zero with their new fancy offensive coordinator who has injected some life into the offense. But all of a sudden, Tyler Warren's the best tight end and like hybrid player not named Travis Hunter in the country. He's hell on wheels as a Wildcat quarterback. Well, did he play? Did he touch the ball down there in that sequence? No. No, it was Drew Aller handing off to Catron Allen three times in a row with a 340-pound motion guy coming in who really was not effective in that situation. And Tyler Warren was a passenger. He was just along for the ride there. And then they were going to throw to him in the left flat on the fourth down. It was covered because Ohio State, of course, was going to cover that. And so you had to throw it into traffic. Just, I thought, a very, very bad set of plays with a guy who was brought on board to not do that.
Yeah, well, in Tyler Warren, like, he didn't touch the ball much really until the second half. You know, they kind of got him going, and specifically the fourth quarter. But this is it's kind of what happens when you only have like one guy, right? One explosive player, is the opponent's going to cover the heck out of that explosive player. And that's probably what we saw Ohio State do. And Penn State found ways to get on the ball, in the second half. And look, they tried a lot of stuff, right? They five players, I think, lined up at the quarterback position and took the snap. Two running backs, two quarterbacks, and then Tyler Warren.
Four in the first series.
Yeah. I mean, so they were trying these things. They had a couple of trick plays in there that they tried. When you don't have the speed on the outside to win your one-on-one matchups, you can't win a championship in this era of college athletics, college football. And that's what we're seeing lacking for Penn State. There's a great stat. I just pulled it up. Just saw it from Tyler Donahue, who covers Penn State for 24/7. Through five Big Ten games, Penn State receivers don't have a touchdown. Aside from Liam Clifford's 107-yard game against UCLA, no Penn State receiver has reached 70 yards in any of the five games. No receiver has gained more than 30 yards on any catch in any Big Ten game except Clifford's 57-yarder against arguably the Big Ten's, you know, one of the worst teams in UCLA. So it's shocking stats. Receiver is obviously the issue at Penn State, and it's kind of been the issue.
Losing Marvin Harrison Jr. of Philadelphia 4 years ago, that would have solved that problem. Yeah, they haven't had it. They went and got Ohio State transfer receiver. They've tried. I guess I just, you know, you can't score. You know, you're not, you got, like, if Penn State, you're going in this game going, we got to win this game 21-20 or something like that, right? We're not scoring 30. If Ohio State scores 35 on us, then we're going to lose the game. To me, you know, you're getting down to that. You're not going to score on 50-yard plays. So it's going to be goal line offense. And I would think you'd have 10 different plays ready to go. Because if you're going to win the game, you know this is how you're going to have to win the game. You're going to have to punch one in from the three. Because you're not scoring on big plays. And you're only going to get down there once or twice. Or hopefully three times. But instead, they didn't. And they couldn't do it. And I don't know why. It's like, okay, these are big plays. It's hard to score from the three at Ohio State. Yeah, you should have had plays that you were practicing for weeks ready to go. And instead, it's like, we're just going to run into the line. I was like, oh my goodness. You have to be super creative because you can't do this. And this is the only, I don't know how you would game plan this game and said, oh my God, I'm shocked. We're at the three. How do we punch it in?
If you listen to James Franklin's post game, and if you saw a story from a meeting I had with the AD there, Pat Kraft, earlier in the week, they both, Pat more strongly put it, that Penn State will, in the new era, where everybody can share the same amount of, roughly the same amount of revenue, will catch up. And the reason that Ohio State and maybe, you know, Michigan and some others have been ahead of them and maybe had those explosive players is because of NIL and how behind Penn State was. And you saw James Franklin in the postgame say something like that, put that in there.
Cried about money. And that's what the biggest loser.
I know, that's a cop out.
And I'm not yelling at you, saying, Brass, I know, you know, but come on.
I know.
Yeah,
but put it on the fans.
Abdul Carter, you got animals on defense. You have had animals on defense, but you somehow can't get them on offense? Come on.
You get running backs, but you can't get receivers? Like, I hate the NIL excuse, and I'm not picking on you, Ross, because I get it. They say it. And James Franklin's got all sorts of excuses, right? And maybe some of it is just good natured stuff, but like when you're talking, you know, let's extend the runway. We're going to remodel the airport. Like these are kind of like the airport. That's not cheap. Like what? Just for our plane? this is a major undertaking. I don't know how airports work, but I don't think it's just like, you know. It's just Penn State has enough going for it and hasn't had enough going for it for 50 years to get great players. No offense to Pitt, but they're sitting in one of the biggest states in the country as the only, you know, year in, year out major football program. And Pitt gets guys. Get Pitt's guys. Do better in Western Pennsylvania. I don't know. There's no excuse for Penn State. We need more money. Okay, Ohio State spent a little bit more money, but that doesn't do your play calling. That doesn't do it. This was a bad loss for Penn State. Beauty is, hey, we'll get to this playoff thing. They could be hosting Notre Dame on a Saturday night down there and win the game, and it'd be great. So it's not fatal on this season, but it is frustrating.
And if you play them, if you meet them again, right? Are they going to throw a pick six in? Are you going to fumble? Are they going to fumble out of the back of the end zone next time you play? You got 14, basically 14 free points, right, against them, and you couldn't do it.
Probably at home. No. Now, to Ohio State's credit, they won the game. And here's the thing. You guys made fun of me a little bit last week when I said I actually liked that close Nebraska game because it showed me the Ohio State defense was coming together. And they sure came together in this game. We can blame Penn State, but we also got to credit Ohio State. They only gave up 6 points. Pick six in the defense's fault. And that group is coming together. The offense, I'm still wondering, but this was a great and important win for Brian Day. It does not solve his problems or his concerns or satisfies his fan base, but sure gets him a nice reprieve. And it sure sets them up to make the playoff almost, barring cataclysmic failure down the stretch here. Pat?
No, it's a huge win for Ohio State. And Ryan Day acknowledged basically afterwards how big it was. Even personally, I mean, he did not bat away questions about how badly he needed to win this game. He said, I think it's fair to say we are at a crossroads. This was a big game for us. We didn't really want to publicly say that, but we said it behind closed doors. And then he's asked about his own emotions. He said, there's a lot to probably unpack that I'm not going to get into all of it, but there's a lot that goes with being the head coach at Ohio State. And you can say, ignore everything that goes on, but your players read it, your coaches read it, your staff members read it, your families read it. You've got to stay strong in those moments. But to accomplish what we did today, top five victory, feels good right now. So he pretty well owned that, like he is feeling, I think, the weight of this season. But they came through. They did. And again, down 10-0 came through. And I think Will Howard's pretty good. I don't think he's great. He might be good enough because of everything they have around him. Their running backs were outstanding. Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. And they sold Travion Henderson on a job share with Quinshon Judkins when he was transferring from Ole Miss. And Day put them both in a room together, said, hey, talk to each other. See how you feel about sharing the ball and everything. And they came out of the room and said, yeah, we can do this. And so he's like, all right, great. And they both played awesome. They ran well. They caught and they blocked like madmen. Man, they threw some blocks, those two guys. So you got those two guys and you have two super elite wide receivers. The offensive line stepped up and played much better. They moved Donovan Jackson to left tackle and he came through and he kind of acknowledged I'm not sure he's thrilled about playing left tackle, but he's doing it because they need him to. And there were a couple times he got beaten and that bothered him, but he's an elite offensive lineman. So that unit is great. And then, yes, Dan, to your point, the defense is stepping up. They've got guys over there, and I think they're starting to come together and play at the level we maybe expected them to all along.
Yeah, Will Howard had, you know, as up and down as a day for a quarterback in a big game that I can recall. It just made some incredibly good throws in big runs, mixed in with some real miscues, some misses, missed a touchdown, missed a first down pass, high, threw wide on another long pass, and then obviously fumbled out of the back of the end zone, threw the pick six. So it was kind of all over the place, but I guess that's what happens when he was probably amped up a little bit. And players talked about that afterward. He had an emotional week. It was an emotional game for him, going back to a place where, you know, he's from a couple hours away and dreamed of playing for Penn State, never got the offer, all that. So that aside, everything else that we saw from Ohio State wasn't really up and down. It was up, right? The running backs, the offensive line, which had been somewhat maligned and obviously was missing a key member and kind of had to readjust, and they moved some pieces around, played really well, especially late, just grinded that game out the last few plays, and mostly on a few times, at least on Will Howard quarterback keepers, which Will Howard said after the game, they're averaging like 5 yards a carry on those quarterback keepers. And, you know, that's really big late in the season. And then defensively, you know, just really good. And took away Tyler Warren, at least in the first three quarters. And then that huge goal line stand. They definitely won, you know, the battle on the line of scrimmage in the trenches.
Yeah, there was a point in the game where Howard, I think he missed somebody wide open down the end. And I just remember Joel Klatt on TV. It was almost quarterback to quarterback. It was like, Will Howard needs to calm down. Like, and it was almost like a hint of like, just like sympathy in his voice. Like, oh no, like Will Howard's going to blow this game. And he didn't. He did settle down and he didn't blow the game. He made some otherwise, yeah, he can thank his defense, but because otherwise you're looking at this game and going, Will Howard blew the game. He threw a pick six and he fumbled the ball out of the end zone. Now, it was a great defensive play by Penn State to get that fumble, and it was close, but still, this is just it's hard going back. I was concerned that was going to be a factor. I think the Ohio State team is forming. Nature is healing. The Buckeyes are coming into form. They're in it to win it. And I don't think that what maybe had been a thought after Nebraska and after Oregon, that this team was going to beat itself, splinter, not be a team. All of that.
Buckle, I don't think, under the pressure.
Buckle under the pressure. I don't think they're going to beat themselves. I think someone's going to have to beat them, and I don't think they're going to be easy to beat. So we'll see. Long way to go. They still got four games, but they got Purdue, Northwestern at Wrigley Field, where they'll have most of the fans. Indiana, the monster game.
That is a big one.
There's a big one coming because they look good. And Michigan at the end. Look, talk quickly about Indiana, but they did trail finally. Michigan State took a 10-0 lead and then goodbye. This team is just really good. It's like you keep sitting there like you're trying to I don't know. It's like watching an old, like a beat up old car go 100 by you on the highway. And you're like, how's that? Like that shouldn't be going that fast. Well, it is. Like, this is a excellent football team. And the fact that it says Indiana on their jersey, forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to get over the laundry. We got to get over the laundry, man.
I got Michigan State. Yeah. Not a great team, but they're not that bad either. Like, they beat them as soundly as Ohio State beat Michigan State. Like, they beat them. And they got gears on this team that are just really good. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, they're a complete team. They are a complete team. They're doing it. They're making plays defensively. They're making plays in special teams. Curtis Rourke is the revelation of the season. I mean, he was good at Ohio, but nobody really noticed that much. And then he had injuries. But he can play. Four touchdown passes, 263 yards, just coming off of a thumb surgery. And this is a team, they have been a very good running team. They've really kind of deceptively effective running the ball, but they didn't run it that well against Michigan State. Didn't matter. We'll just throw it. We'll throw it. So Curtis Rourke does. And I was sitting there thinking Saturday that there's maybe three elite quarterbacks in the country, and it's Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and Dillon Gabriel. But maybe I'm shortchanging Curtis Rourke, because the seasons he has had is just been outstanding. And they're doing this, again, with like 12 dudes from James Madison and a quarterback from the MAC and some guys from like Old Dominion. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is one of the great coaching jobs I've ever seen.
Right. And then they're not whining about not having enough NIL to get one more position, right?
Not to my knowledge.
All right, let's take a break and we'll get to some of the SEC stuff. I did want to quickly note, Dillon Gabriel played an amazing game against Michigan. That offense is... Whew.
Yeah, and they're cooking, man.
Everyone's open.
Yeah.
They're getting better
as the season goes on.
He is settling in as the Duck quarterback. And it's just like Dillon... I think we talked about this. He's been around so long, you just assume it's plug and play is going to work. But it's certainly working now, because it's no longer plug and play. He's kind of, you can see them mastering that offense. And so, you know, it's like Oregon's in this spot where they're number one, and it should be noted how big of a day it is when Oregon just goes into Michigan and is the favorite and then plays like it. And I know Michigan's having a horrible year, but where you're the Ducks, Duck fans should be just loving life. Because going into Michigan Stadium and winning, I don't care what year it is got to be a lot of fun for a team, and they did it. I know Phil Knight was there quite pleased, I guess, on the sideline watching his minions win. He's got the whole thing.
Speaking of NIL.
Speaking of NIL.
No problem there.
If only Penn State had a buck or two.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They're like a million alums. Like, I know. And Jason, if every alum gives a dollar, you know, okay.
111,000 in the stadium.
He's like, I got 750,000. I think he said this earlier. I need everybody to contribute. Like, dude, some of these people are like library science majors and everyone to the damn, they don't care about your football team, but like every guy, everyone. Everybody give me $5. All right. Texas A&M, not good.
Oh,
I saw this coming.
Yeah.
Pat, you did too, didn't you?
Yes.
This was an easy hangover game.
Yeah.
They're controlling the SEC. Everyone's pumping them up. And what he said, you know what's not good for a hangover? Loud noises like Bryce Williams Stadium on Saturday night. 44-20, dominated by South Carolina, who is a much, much better team than their right. We'll talk quickly about them too, but. A&M has gone from sitting atop the SEC in control of everything to they're one loss from being out, because they now have a loss in the SEC. They already have the loss to Notre Dame in the non-conference. They got two losses. And presumably there could be a point where they're battling Notre Dame for an at-large bid. And they're not going to have it there. They now have to win out. And that means Texas at home at the end of the season. This is a team, though, that could still win out, win the next five games. They'll end up a two seed, or they could be out of this thing. All because of one loss. But this was not a close loss. And I think close losses is what's going to decide these final factors. So they got manhandled. South Carolina, tremendous job. They're a couple plays from a monster season. I mean, they blew the LSU game. They kind of blew the Alabama game. You know, they got beat by Ole Miss, but other than that, and I give a lot of credit to their players and to Shane Beamer. Lenore Sellers, a very interesting quarterback. The defensive line is, I watched a lot of this game. They just, they're three sacks and they're in there all the time. They're ferocious. But this team could have given up or sagged a little. They are playing extremely hard and playing extremely well, and they're still fighting. They had more energy, more fight in them than a team that was conceivably playing for the SEC championship. And that, to me, is a great sign of the coaching job Shane Beamer is doing, at least this year, if not overall in that program. I know he's been kind of mentioned sometimes on a hot seat or this or that. He's 4 years in, hasn't been a huge success. I would let this guy cook for a little while. I think he's got a lot that he's building a program. May not be there always in the wins and losses, but I think South Carolina has their guy. I would not put him on any hot seats, and I thought they showed that Saturday night. Pat, what'd you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I watched quite a bit of that game, and it was funny. I was watching that on one screen and Louisville Clemson on the other, and those are two underdog coaches you do not want to play against. Shane Beamer, especially as a home dog, and Jeff Brohm as an anywhere dog, because they're just dangerous. They get their teams ready for big moments very, very well, and this was a big moment. And A&M walked right into the trap, but it was so interesting. You know, I mean, USC jumps up 14-0, but then A&M storms back and actually takes the lead late in the first half. They're up 20-17, but then, so you think, okay, well, maybe just, you know, South Carolina had juice and then they've lost the juice. No, second half, they dominated. They destroyed them. They outscored them 24-0 in the second half. Made big play after big play after big play. They have athletes. I mean, they've got, as you mentioned, their defensive line, they've got some creatures there, but they've got some playmaking athletes. Lenora Sellers runs really hard. And A&M, I think we probably discussed this last week in talking about this game. They've had a really good season, but you kind of feel like they are maybe a little bit overachieving, and it was going to catch up with them some point, and this game just set up to be that game. Now, their next two games should be winnable, and then you've got the cataclysm against Texas. My God, as if that game could get any bigger. Oh, my. But, yeah, this one, I do think we saw it coming, and it played out. I mean, I was a little surprised the ebb and flow of the game, but I'm not surprised at all that South Carolina won.
Well, A&M, you know, we've seen them defensively in tackling play really well, and that was not what we saw on Saturday. I think they had the most missed tackles I saw in a game this season. And credit, obviously, South Carolina for some of that. I mean, they couldn't tackle Rocket Sanders. They couldn't tackle Sellers either. They were just having all kinds of trouble defensively of bringing down those guys. So it was impressive. And like you said, man, South Carolina, I mean, they should have won the LSU game. They took Alabama to the ropes, but that this is a program, this is a top 25 type team, maybe a top 20 type team. And they just, you know, blew a couple games and they could be right there. I agree, Dan. You know, I think everybody in this new world's kind of got to ask themselves, like, what is the expectation for our program? And South Carolina should ask that when it comes to Shane Beamer. You know, what is South Carolina? I mean, South Carolina has the 11th or 12th in resources in the SEC. So where should you finish? I think Shane Beamer's got them going in the right direction. And sometimes the grass isn't greener when you think about making a coaching change.
No, the buyouts are greener.
That's about it. That's where the green is. Yeah.
We're going to get to a lot of teams when we do this playoff thing, which I've now teased like four times. But just quickly, SMU dominates Pitt, puts a whoop on him. Pat, your pick of SMU as ACC champ preseason, inspired.
He backed off on it, though, Dan. He backed off.
Got wimped. Yeah, he wimped out. Okay, let's forget that part. Miami beat
Duke. It's in writing at SI.com, somewhere in the archives,
somewhere,
that I picked SMU
somewhere
to win the ACC. And on the archives of this podcast.
Two of my favorite possibilities here is that the three seed could be BYU, which was not in a major conference 2 years ago. Yeah. And SMU is the four seed, which was not in a major conference last year. Those are going to be the three and four seed in college football. Fantastic.
That would be tremendous. Yeah.
Miami has got an offense. They don't know, their defense is sketch. Clemson now looks out. Clemson does not control its own destiny anymore. That was bad.
Yep.
I don't know where Clemson's got to pick up the pieces. They got
really
they got,
unexpectedly bad. Yeah.
They got really dominated. Bad. Dominated.
I mean, wow. Their fans were gone by the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like they were like, I've seen good football. This ain't it. We don't stand. Like they gave up. That was amazing. Like there was a picture from Florida State. There was like 400 people there that weren't in North Carolina blue the other day. But I get that. But like, I mean, you're Clemson. You're like, we're going to have a dramatic comeback. We're going to do this. Nope. They were like, we're out. They didn't want to watch it. This Miami SMU possible ACC championship game, if we get to it, is going to be like 60-58.
Yeah.
And I don't know if SMU doesn't win it. Like, they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this game's on ACC Network. Not everyone's seeing it, but this is a fascinating race in the and their only loss is to BYU, right? Is that they lost to BYU?
That's right, by three at home. Yeah, to BYU. Three, right? We thought at the time, like, bad loss, and no,
not bad at all, loss. Right?
No.
Yeah, some of these bad losses aren't bad losses anymore. So we'll talk about it with Alabama. Their loss to Vanderbilt, not that bad anymore.
Yeah. Vanderbilt, the Alabama, state of Alabama sweep.
Yeah.
Diego Pavia defeats Hugh Freeze for the third consecutive year.
It's unbelievable. Diego Pavia owns Hugh Freeze regardless of who's wearing what uniforms.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. Third straight win. And neither of them, Diego and Hugh, were at the same school.
Right. They beat him.
You know,
New Mexico State beat Liberty when Hugh Freeze coached Liberty, and Diego was at New Mexico State. The next year, New Mexico State beats Auburn as Hugh has moved to Auburn. And then this year, Vanderbilt beats Auburn as Diego has moved.
It's got to be a first.
I'm guessing there's a lot of nightmares in Hugh Freeze's world, but Diego Pavia is one of them.
I can imagine Diego like popping out of your closet, you know, while you're trying to sleep.
A lot of nightmares in Hugh Freeze's
shirtless
world.
And like,
there's a lot of things like, boy, whatever. I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I had never met that guy or dialed that number. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Just guessing. Right. All right, let's go through this playoff thing and tell me this is all Nick Bromberg. Blame him. No, I think it's pretty accurate. Okay. This is what we think. The rankings on Tuesday night will be 7 o'clock Tuesday night. The committee is going to unveil their initial rankings. Now, again, this is pointless because a lot of these, whatever, but this is what they do. Everyone gets excited for the first rankings. I'm excited for the first rankings because whatever, I'm easily amused. But this is what we think will be the first rankings, not the final rankings, not what we can debate whether it should be, but this is what we think the first rankings will be. Number one, Oregon, 8-0, Big Ten champ. They'll project them as the Big Ten champ. They still play Maryland, Wisconsin, and Washington, and must be somebody else. Are they 9-0? I don't know. Whatever.
No, yeah, they're 9-0. They play Maryland, Washington, Wisconsin. That's it.
Okay, yeah. They're 9-0. Sorry, 9-0.
Yeah,
Big
Ten. Yeah.
Any dispute on Oregon won on Tuesday night.
Clear number one. Clear. Yeah.
Georgia will come in at 2. 7-1 SEC champ. A bad half against Alabama, but after that, they've done what they need to do. They have the win over Clemson. They have the win at Texas. Carson Beck is throwing a lot of interceptions. He had 3 more in beating the Florida yesterday. 34-20 in a game. Those were maybe a little closer than some wanted, but still touchdown victory. He's had 11 interceptions the last 5 games, but Georgia, I think, is the SEC champ. I think you'd still project them as the SEC champ. They still have to go at Ole Miss and play Tennessee. So we'll see. A lot of meat on that bone for Georgia still. And then they get UMass and Georgia Tech in Atlanta. But number 2, Georgia, do we agree?
Yes.
Yeah, I would think there was a debate over Ohio State, right? I mean, I think people would probably go back and forth on that.
No, but they
got
to be a conference champ, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, hold on now. Are you projecting the committee's rankings or the playoff? Because those are going to be two different sets of numbers.
Right. See, I'm already confused.
Yeah, so these are two completely different things.
Bracket.
Yeah. Okay, let's project the playoff bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, this is what happens.
Look, you're
confused.
They
tried to educate us. I watched a webinar.
I know. Imagine fans. Like, this is going to be an absolute cluster, and nobody's going to get it until we go through one full season, and then maybe going into next season, people will
understand. Well, even then, I don't care. Something will happen in the end.
There'll be multiple AQs for the SEC and the Big Ten, Dan.
Yeah, that takes out the fun.
Yeah.
This better go right, and already my education has failed. I don't know what they're doing Tuesday night.
We're projecting out, then yes, Oregon one seed, Big Ten champ gets the bye, then
Georgia
SEC
will be the
champ,
two.
Georgia, right, 12 right. and 1. Projecting both of those, 12 and 1, Oregon 13 and 0, yeah.
Okay, number three.
Real quick, though, Georgia was, again, they were playing with their food for quite a while against Florida. If DJ Lagway didn't get hurt, Florida might have won that game. I mean, Florida played the second half with a third-string quarterback who was a walk-on from Yale. So,
to me, the schedules shape out, Pat, that Texas and Georgia probably will meet again in the championship game. And it's hard to bring a tweet in twice. And the way Georgia's playing wouldn't surprise me at all if the Longhorns won the rematch.
Wait a minute. A kid left Yale to walk on at Georgia?
Yeah.
At Florida.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Yeah. You know, you can ask the young man why. Maybe he's a grad transfer. I don't know. But he's from Florida. But to walk on to be the third string guy.
I'm going to give up my Yale. I don't know. I don't want to say anything. Everyone makes their decisions. Don't leave Yale. Patrons finance and make $1 billion. Right. Like path is right there, brother.
Get a $200,000 a year job on Wall Street when you're 24.
Yeah. Don't worry about walking on anywhere. Anyway, I don't know what he did. So, okay, fine. Number three, ACC projected champ would be Miami, but this could also be SMU. And this will be interesting if they get to that spot. Mm-hmm. Cam Ward, 5 more touchdowns against Duke. Mm. They finish at Georgia Tech, Wake, and at Syracuse, who is... Has anyone done a better job in their first year as Fran Brown?
Making a 6-2, right?
6-2, they're doing a great job. Cam Ward, a lot of people throwing the Heisman at him. Please, I'm still a Travis Hunter guy.
Mm.
But Cam Ward's very good. Nothing against Cam.
Cam Ward has a sixth sense kind of Mahomes-like. I'm not saying he's Patrick Mahomes. For one thing, he's much shorter than Patrick Mahomes. But he's got the arm angles, the vision, the creativity, and the complete confidence that no matter what, I'm just going to take it down the field.
And he does.
Now, I would put Miami fourth and not third here, but go ahead.
BYU, projected Big 12 champ. They're 8-0. At Utah, which is going to be interesting.
Yeah, holy war.
Holy war.
Yeah. Utah's lost 4 straight, I think.
Yeah, they're reeling. Yeah. No one saw it coming. Then they get Kansas. At Arizona State, will not be easy.
No.
And then Houston, who just beat Kansas State, and somebody tweeted me, it was like, is this the most improved team in the course of a season? And yes, I couldn't have been more wrong about my lock of the week. Houston beats Kansas State. Yeah. I thought Kansas State would win by 2 touchdowns. Good job by
me. Don't bet against Willie Fritz, Dan.
He's got it going. Willie Fritz has got it going. So
BYU definitely has of the four P4, you know, projected champions, BYU probably has the tougher final few games.
Yeah.
Well, other than Georgia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Ole Miss and Tennessee. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But yes.
And honestly, Georgia Tech, too. Georgia's got when you really look at it.
The schedule's killer.
Georgia's probably got the number one ranked strength of schedule as far as top 25 ranked games.
So there you go, BYU. And obviously, Iowa State loses as a contender. Texas Tech, incredible comeback in the last 2 minutes to beat Iowa State.
Yeah.
They were drunk on the too much water. Too much water. They're celebrating the water championship.
Yeah, that's it.
Got the a water bloated, championship. The bloating got in at the end there. Anyway.
Water championships take down cyclones. There's the headline.
Colorado now has a sort of a path there to get to the championship game.
Yeah.
Coach Prime in this playoff would be pretty wild. Oh,
Lord.
So,
oh, Lord.
Just forewarned. Yeah.
Coach Prime in the Big 12 championship game, and then potentially in the playoff would be quite, let's just say, ratings bonanza.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But this is where we're going to get to the part is like, hey, if Miami and BYU went out, then it's possible no other ACC or Big 12 team makes the playoff. If you get to the finals and SMU upsets Miami and say Colorado upsets BYU, you could have multiple bids from both schools.
You need an upset. Yeah, right. The title game potentially to get that second
last
bid.
Last night was a bad night for the Big 12 from a multi-bid standpoint.
It was.
Iowa State and Kansas State both losing. I mean, that's very much looking like now the champion is going to be the only team.
Okay. Five, Ohio State.
I got Indiana.
Okay. Mm.
It's close. I mean, it's hard to not look. They do.
Yeah.
They'll settle it. But I just think Ohio State does have a loss. Now, maybe Indiana would have the same loss, and maybe it would have been worse if they would have played at Oregon. But they have a better record. They were much better against head-to-head in Nebraska. They both dominated Michigan State. I know they don't have – Indiana does not have a win like Ohio State at Happy Valley, but they also don't have a loss. So,
fair enough. That's a debate point.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's shaping up that, you know, if – just kind of – although I hate to pencil it in because Indiana has been so good, but penciling in an Ohio State at home win over Indiana and then Oregon and Ohio State, you know, rematching in the Big Ten championship game. The big question would be if Ohio State loses that game again, would a two-loss Ohio State loser of the Big Ten championship game drop then below the team that they beat in Indiana if they're like 11-1? You know, that's a decision the committee's going to have to make. And maybe they both host playoff games, but you might have Ohio State as like the 7 seed hosting a game and Indiana, as Pat said, like the 5.
Right. All right. I would go Ohio State because of the quality of victory against Penn State and the margin of defeat against Oregon was so small. I'm not going to ding them, but where they rank Indiana is going to be a big tell on this because Indiana very much has the case to be 5.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're unbeaten, and usually they go by like the number of losses just kind of dictates all these polls and everything. So
unbeaten
we'll
and a dominant unbeaten. They've won every game by 2 touchdowns.
Nothing close. They haven't played anybody, but everybody that isn't great that they've played, they've crushed. Yep. And nobody else can really say that, especially in a season where there's a lot of close calls. All right, I got Bromberg, and I agree, 6, Texas. They're 7-1. They had the loss to Georgia. They still play Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, which can show a little, all these three can show some fight. I don't know what Florida's got left. And then finally, they go to College Station in what is building up to be the game of, might be the game of the year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So big.
But yeah, you got them at 6. They'd be the second SEC team.
I've got them 7. I've got Indiana 5, Ohio State 6, Texas 7. But, you know, I wouldn't strenuously argue against having Texas either 6 or even 5, but probably not 5, just because their quality wins aren't that good right now.
Yeah, but,
yeah. When you look at quality wins and stuff, I mean, Penn State has an argument too in a lot of ways because they have fairly similar schedules. I think when you look at it, strength of schedule wise. I don't have a real big problem with that. And just like we talked about Oregon, Ohio State meeting in a rematch, you know, Texas and Georgia kind of – Texas can win at A&M, obviously, and Georgia's got work to do. But those two schools control their own destiny to the championship game.
Okay. Number 7 is Tennessee. This is who he's got. I'm not sure. It hasn't always been beautiful, but they are 7-1. Again, it was a dogfight with Kentucky.
Yeah.
And really, Kentucky had the backup QB in there. It's a bad pick six that really changed the game. But their defense is so good. Volunteers defense is so good. They still play Mississippi State there at Georgia, UTEP, and then Vandy. So two of those at Georgia will dictate an awful lot. I just want to see a home playoff game in Neyland.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
They did a thing last night where they had their band wearing these lights.
That was cool.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That was fantastic.
Absolute scene. Absolute scene. This is a dangerous team, but again, they're not dominant. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's got Penn State 8.
Yeah, I'd flip those. I would put Penn State at 7. I would put Penn State ahead of Tennessee right now, but that's just me.
Yeah. Pat?
I tell you what, this is to me where it gets really squishy is after 7. You know, it's 8, 9, 10, 11. And I think you make a case for SMU. They just destroyed an undefeated team. Their one loss is to an undefeated team by 3 points. I think you could make a case for SMU ahead of Penn State or Tennessee.
But if we're projecting they lose to Miami in the championship game.
No, we're just projecting. We're projecting what the committee will do Tuesday.
On Tuesday. Yeah.
Will they credit SMU and put them in there? Bromberg says no. He doesn't even have them in the 12.
Doesn't even have them in the 12? What the hell does he have in?
Well, we're going to get to it. It's very exciting.
Okay. Dramatic reveal. Okay.
So 9, he's got Notre Dame sitting there at 7-1. They still play Florida State, Virginia, Army in Yankee Stadium and then at USC. Obviously, they have one terrible loss, but that's what he's got. He's got Notre Dame at 9. And then he has Indiana, who we've discussed, at 10 for tomorrow for Tuesday.
I got Notre Dame at 9. You know, they will be a super flashpoint because they clearly have the worst loss of any contender.
Yeah.
And their big win over A&M lost a little bit of luster last night.
Yep.
So
who do you, so is the top 10, does everyone agree the top 10? And this is by how the bracket would look. Oregon, Georgia, Miami, BYU, Texas, Tennessee, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Indiana in some order.
No, I would put SMU in there.
SMU
ahead of,
in there.
Yeah.
Over who?
Over
right
Notre
now,
Dame
I would say SMU or... 9. Well, yeah. I mean, SMU 8. I'm sorry. Notre Dame 9. And right now I have Penn State 10 over Tennessee 11, but I probably just need to go back and look at that.
I'd agree with, that's more of what I would think.
Okay, so you get SMU in there, and that's your field. Bromberg has Alabama at 11.
No.
They're 6-2. The loss is to Texas. The loss is to Vandy, which no longer looks that bad. But here's the thing. They're at LSU this weekend, and that's going to define the season.
Going to work its way out there. Yeah,
that's an elimination game for sure.
Yeah, and that could be the winner of the LSU Alabama game could be the last team into the field at 11.
Last team with a good argument.
After that,
it's Mercer, Oklahoma, Auburn. They should win out.
Yeah.
But this LSU Alabama game, high stakes. And then at 12, it's Boise State as the group of five champ. That obviously, he thinks that's what they will rank and Boise would get in. So he is projecting Boise will be ranked ahead of an unbeaten Army team. That's all he's projecting. I would agree. Yeah. Boise State, close loss to Oregon at the beginning of the season. But Army will have a case to get into this thing if they can win out.
That's it. They get their shot at Notre Dame, and they got to win the rest of them too. But you get your shot at Notre Dame with everything you could possibly dream of if you win. So it's going to be – talk about a game we did not see coming as a huge game, Yankee Stadium, like the old days, like in the 1940s when it was Notre Dame and Army, you know, and it was the biggest game of the year. That was going to be – could be if Army keeps taking care of business. And we'll see Bryson Daly, their excellent quarterback, was out this game where we don't know what his status is going to be. But if they get there undefeated, wow.
They get there undefeated. Red Smith gets a spot in the press box. Grantland Rice.
Yes.
Right? We get all the old New York writers get in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also interesting, they would only play 11 games. They would, instead of 13 games on Selection Sunday, they would only play 12.
Yeah.
If they beat Notre Dame, they're at North Texas, they're off. Notre Dame in the Bronx, Texas San Antonio, then they would play the conference championship game, the American Athletic Conference Championship game, which they would be able to host. Now, I have heard that they will not host it,
They will not.
They'll move it to Foxborough.
They're renovating the stadium.
Yeah, right? They're renovating Michi Stadium. Bad timing.
Yeah.
And they can't do it. So they would go to Gillette Stadium in Boston, outside of Boston.
Mm-hmm. But it's too bad because Michi Stadium is unbelievably picturesque and a great place to be. But West Point is in the middle of nowhere. It has no hotels and half the stadium is missing. So
it's the half stadium missing.
Other than
the
that. Other than that, it's great.
Other than that, let's put it in a parking lot in Foxborough.
Yeah.
But so, the game at the Bronx is going to be wild. Anyway, that's the projection. I think SMU is the wild card there. And I don't know that, this is going to be interesting. That's what we're going to watch. Does the SEC get the benefit of the doubt over SMU? Because not only is it an ACC team, it isn't a brand ACC team.
Yeah, they've been an ACC team for 3 months.
Yeah, and that's a thing. All right, we'll be back with small sample Heisman. Say something nice. All right, we like to give out a Heisman every week. Why wait? Why wait to the end? Small sample Heisman time. Anyone got one? Anyone do any research?
Yeah, I got one.
All right, Ross, Dan, go for it, buddy.
How about... We haven't talked a whole lot this year about North Carolina State, for probably good reason. They haven't really been in the mix. They were out, kind of out of things pretty early with a few early losses, but had a big win yesterday. And their quarterback, C.J. Bailey, freshman. Let me give you his numbers. This is beat Stanford 59-28, 18 for 20. So 90% completion rate, 234 yards, 3 touchdowns, almost 12 yards in attempt. From what I have read, there's no NC State quarterback who has thrown for at least 3 touchdowns and completed at least 90% of his passes in a single game. So CJ Bailey, NC State, you get my small sample for this week.
All right. I'm going to go with Caleb Johnson, running back at Iowa, who was allowing Kirk Ferentz to just get back in touch with who he really is here. He had his 7th 100-yard rushing game of the season, 24 carries, 135 yards, 3 touchdowns, and they pulverized Wisconsin. They are a weird team. When they win, they just kill people. Iowa's margins are 40, 17, 17, 24, 26, and 32. But then they inexplicably lose to Michigan State. So anyway, but Caleb Johnson's had a great season. Really, really good for them. And it has allowed Iowa to do this. Run it 54 times, throw it 10. It's like Service Academy ball. Kirk Ferentz so happy. They got the new quarterback in there, and they can just turn around and hand off all day.
He's going to stop thinking in the shower about punting. He should be thinking about touchdowns. 4 40-point games this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're better without Brian Ferentz. It's a really wild concept.
Amazing. Amazing. The loss to Michigan State is one of those, there's just a results across the season. There's times just what was that? I don't get. All right, I'm going to give my small sample Heisman to Jackson Dart, quarterback at Ole Miss. 6 touchdowns against Arkansas, at Arkansas. Not easy. 25 of 31, 515 yards. He also ran 10 times for 47, and they had a long one, like a 31 yarder. They just blitzkrieged Arkansas.
Yeah.
Just took them out. And it's been a weird year at Ole Miss, but they got Georgia coming.
Yeah, they're not out of it.
They're not out of it. And they got Jackson Dart playing like that. Very interesting. So Jackson Dart wins my small sample Heisman for putting up those numbers. All right, we said some mean things. Can we say something nice?
We'll say Sam Pittman needs himself an old Sam Pittman needs an old Hams beer after that game.
That was a tough one for Sam. That was a tough one. When Ole Miss is on, there's another one. When they're on, boy.
Yes, exactly. Well, they are smoking Georgia, some people.
We'll see what they're on at Georgia. That Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Ole Miss, this is going to be very interesting little weekend coming up. We'll have plenty of time to discuss that as the week goes on. All right, say something nice. Anyone say something nice? Pat?
Yes.
You're usually suspiciously not nice. But...
No, I'm going to be legit nice.
Okay.
Coach Prime and the Colorado Buffaloes are not the only team having a sneaky good year in the state of Colorado. Colorado State right now is tied with Boise State for first place in the Mountain West Conference and has the inside track to play Boise in the Mountain West Championship game. They have strung together four straight wins. They close Wyoming, who's not good, Fresno, who's tail spinning, and Utah State. I mean, they could very well finish undefeated in the Mountain West Conference. They started the year, they got absolutely freight trained by Texas. They lost handily to Colorado. They lost to Oregon State, but since then they put it together and had four straight emphatic wins. They're 6-3 overall. They're 4-0 in the league. Jay Norvell maybe saving his job and turning that program around nicely here.
Other than Billy Napier, no one, I think, entered this season on a hotter seat than Dave Aranda at Baylor. And they lost three straight in late September and in early October. And they have now won three straight after a bye week. They've reeled off three in a row at Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, and then TCU Saturday night on a last-minute field goal in which they converted on a final drive, fourth and nine, and then kicked the field goal as time expired. So Dave Aranda, back from the dead, he has geared a kind of a mid-season type of turnaround there in Baylor on the back of a who started as a backup quarterback to start the year, Sawyer Robertson. So give one there for Dave Aranda and what they've done there at the Bears. And by the way, just throwing another say something nice in about Willie Fritz. We talked about him earlier, but year one at Houston, started the season 1-4 and has won the three of the last four, TCU, Utah, and then, of course, the big upset of Kansas State.
Also, real quick, say something nice about Vanderbilt having swept the state of Alabama, beating the Crimson Tide and the Tigers. They did it. I was trying to look it up here. Haven't had full time, but they did it in 1955. They beat both of them.
Yeah.
That might be the last time.
That's the last time. Yeah, that was the last time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's a lot of nice happening here. Excuse me.
Yeah. Too much nice.
What is going on? Let's be nice to each other. I got two. I'm going to be nice. First nice, Mark Fletcher Jr., Miami Hurricanes. His father passed away just before the Florida State game last week. He scored a touchdown in that game. Very emotional moment. They had obviously the services this week and the fallout after your death of a parent. Very difficult. The whole team went to the service. It's from Fort Lauderdale. His dad, I guess, was a very popular like team dad around the team. Like other parents really liked him. And, he had another touchdown in Miami's game yesterday over Duke. He had 65 more yards. A good football player, Mark Fletcher Jr. Went down to his knees and pointed up. It was another very, very, very cool emotional moment for him. Takes a lot of strength to keep playing through that and to have two straight weeks where you've scored kind of to honor your father. Just a great, great story and, you know, great, great deal. My other one is UConn. UConn is bowl eligible, baby. 6-3. Someone get them some mayo. Can they get in the mayo bowl? Can we get them in a Pop-Tart bowl? Can we get them in a good one? They got the brakes beat off them by Maryland in week one, and they were next year they're going to be the only undefeated independent team other than Notre Dame. They're trying to get into any league imaginable anywhere. Woe is us. You know what? They're playing pretty damn well. Beat Georgia State Friday night, 34-27. They got a running back, Mel Brown, who is legit. Averaged almost 10 yards a game, a carry. They are 6-3. They still play UAB and UMass, and they got a game at Syracuse. 8-4, very much in the picture for the UConn Huskies. And we'll see. That game against Syracuse could be well. So for a program that has all sorts of like headwinds and all sorts of confusion and a frustrated fan base and a concern of do we have to take our basketball program out of the Big East where they keep winning national championships to save our football program. Football program's doing pretty well. Maybe you're not beating name teams that you want, but hey, enjoy it if you're a UConn Husky fan because you got a shot in an 8-win season and you're bowl eligible in early November. Things are going pretty well. So great job.
They don't even need to go New England United with UMass. They don't need the agreement.
They don't need you. Yeah, UMass needs to tell, hey, please, let's New England unite. Now UConn's like, we're back, baby.
Yeah.
We're back. The Orlovsky years. Let's do it. They're pretty good back then. Great job. That's a great turnaround down there in store. So good for UConn. All right, that's our show. Hey, here's what we're going to do on Tuesday. We are going to come out after the rankings so we can analyze the rankings. We predicted them. See how we do. And so we'll be out a little later on Tuesday than we normally would, but we're going to do a little something after the rankings.
Election night.
Ranking night, Ross. We will not talk politics. Everything is politics. You have a 1 hour of free zone.
Yeah. Yes, we will.
No comment. We have no comments.
We got no Steve Kornacki khakis, you know, breaking down the electoral map. No.
You need a break? We got your break.
Yeah.
You ain't going to hear crap. So that's it. We will get very heated over whether SMU is properly ranked. That's the real number one seed, Electoral College. We'll play number 8 seed, Red State. Electoral College, man. They got no recruits. What is that?
Ain't played nobody.
Ain't played nobody, Paul. Electoral College. All right. Thanks for listening, subscribing. Season's getting going. We will talk to you later.